today on Vox Talks Economics. What's the best way to regulate urban traffic? Welcome to Vox Talks Economics from the Centre for Economic Policy Research. My name is Tim Phillips. Every week we bring you the best new research in economics. So remember, subscribe, follow us on Instagram. You'll find us at Vox Talks Economics. All of us who live in cities know the problem. I need to get across town. It's rush hour. Do I take the metro or the bus or do I drive? Will I have to pay congestion charge if I drive? Will I be stuck in a traffic jam? Should I leave earlier? Nicolas Martinez of the Toulouse School of Economics and his co-author, Isis Durmayr, made a model of what happens when the population of an entire city all make this decision every day. And they've used it to investigate the usefulness of different policies to regulate traffic. Nicolas joins me now. Welcome to Vox Talks Economics.
Hello, Tim.
All major cities occasionally grind to a halt. Well, everyone I've ever been in anyway. Do we have estimates about how much this congestion is costing?
Of course. So I would like to start with some numbers from INRIX, which is a very big firm that deals with traffic congestion, tracking it all over the world. Mm-hmm. And to give some numbers specific to Paris, which is the city that we look in our study, it's the third most congested city in the world. And you see that on average, in a year, people are losing around 138 hours stuck in traffic. Quite a big number.
Yeah.
But it's important to highlight this happens a bit everywhere, right? So in the US, in developing countries, traffic jams are an issue. And it's important to take this into account. But not only the time they're spending in traffic, but as well, how is this relating to the emissions of pollutants because of the number of cars in the streets, and which individuals, which demographics are more affected.
So we can think of that in costs, in financial costs, don't we? What can we add up to think about this as a financial cost?
The classic way is just to think there are X number of hours that we have spent in traffic, stuck in traffic, and what is the value of an hour of individuals? Mm-hmm. So INRIX provides as well this type of costs, and for the US alone, they find around $87 billion in a given year.
Whoa. We have policies in many cities now that are being used to help people move around to get over this problem. What sort of policies are under consideration at the moment?
So I think there are two principal or like most popular type of policies. One is just restricting the number of cars, like telling some specific drivers you cannot drive today. And the other one is to have urban tolls, so charging individuals to drive. To give a bit more examples, like in the case of Paris, you have restrictions for emission peaks that are specific to like the vintage of the car, the type of fuel that they're using. Also really based on like trying to curb the level of emissions. In the case of London, it's more of a daily fee that you have to pay if you enter the congestion charge zone, and it can be increased depending on the vintage of your car.
And reading your research, you point out that it's very difficult to know in advance what the impact of these policies is going to be. But why is it so difficult? Can you explain that?
Of course. So we have to think first of what are the things that individuals are taking into account when choosing their transportation modes. That is going to be mostly the cost of using public transport or your car and the duration of the trip. And when we're thinking about urban traffic policies, they suffer from something called induced demand. And this means that whenever I reduce the number of cars in the street, I improve the speeds of the remaining cars. And since it has a better quality now, then some extra individuals might say, oh, I want to drive as well. Mm-hmm. And it's important to take into account these feedback loops when looking at policy.
This does sound extraordinarily difficult to model, and we're going to get onto that in a minute. But I mean, first of all, there is a way that is used at the moment to examine policies. You work out what the level of congestion is beforehand. You measure congestion afterwards. You see if it's improved and by how much. What can we find out from that? And I guess more importantly, what can we not find out from that?
Of course. So this is quite useful if we want to measure the actual impact of an implemented policy, right? Because as you said, for outcomes that we can measure, like speed or quality, we can see the effect of implementing it. But it doesn't tell us that much about policies we haven't implemented, because these policies may act very differently, right? So if we put a driving restriction and we see how this is changing the level of emissions or the speeds, this is not telling us exactly what's going to happen if an individual has to pay instead a toll in order to enter the city center. So if we want to compare policies, or if we want to figure out what level is the level we want to have, right? Like what price is the toll that we should charge? Mm-hmm. Measuring the before and after is not necessarily informative.
Yeah, we don't have two Parises, for example.
Indeed.
You modeled the journeys that people take within a city. In your model, what journeys are individuals making? What choices do they have and what choices do they not have?
We focus on the morning commute, right? So we're not really looking at trips all over today. And by morning commute, we focus on working and studying trips. So trips that you have to do. Mm-hmm. We abstract a bit from these trips where you could choose to go or not to go or to do it a different day. And what we allow the individuals is to choose in two dimensions. The first one, which transportation mode are you choosing? Do you want to walk? Do you want to bike? You're going to take your car or public transport or a motorbike if you have one. And important things model-wise, we know which of these alternatives each individual has access to. So we allow them to choose between different alternatives, but keeping it realistic. And the other thing individuals get to choose is their departure time, right? So if it's too busy to leave at peak hour, could I leave earlier? That's something they can choose as well.
So what assumptions can you make about the types of transport that they're choosing? And are you making any assumptions about the roads that they're traveling on?
Yeah, so regarding transportation modes, we know if the individuals have access to it, but we also know characteristics. So we know the vintage of the car, the type of engine the car has, the fuel, and that's just going to be very important when we want to back out the emissions and the fuel consumption, which is linked to the cost of using your car. Mm-hmm. Same if an individual has a public transportation subscription, this is something we know and that we take into account. Then durations of the trips or the travel time, this is going to be determined by how many other individuals are driving. Mm-hmm. What I think it's nice is that what we do is that we take the whole metropolitan area of Paris and we divide it in five different areas. So we have the downtown, we have the ring roads that are just at the end of the downtown, we have the suburbs, close and far suburbs, as well as highways connecting these areas. And importantly, we allow for the traffic level and therefore the speeds to be different in each one of these areas. This is important because not everyone is driving in all these locations at the same time, but also because they have different types of infrastructure, right? So in the highways, you don't really have intersections, you don't have traffic lights, and this allows you to drive faster than if you're in the city center with many small streets, many intersections, etc.
This already sounds extraordinarily complicated. And I've seen research done before, which has focused on individual journeys and the choices for those particular journeys. You're not doing that, are you? You're doing the entire city.
Yes. So let's say we start from these individual journeys. So we have these individuals that are representative of like the population as a whole, each one making their own decisions. But then we aggregate this to have a total or an average speed for each location. And individuals are taking these speeds into account at equilibrium. So in a way, we start from the individual level, but we go to the whole city.
You estimate this model using real data about Paris. How do you get that data off the journey that everybody's making?
We estimate the model using many data sets. The main one about the transportation trips that people have taken, so actual transportation trips. And for this, we use a survey made by the Paris Transportation Authority, where they go to the houses of many individuals in the city and they ask them about the trips they did the day before. Mm-hmm. Of course, this we need to complement. So we have additional information from TomTom and Google Maps to have extra details on the duration, on the routes that individuals are taking with car, with public transport. As I mentioned before, additional data to note the emissions that the cars that they own are making, and some information on public transport, on how crowded different lines are, like how comfortable it is to use it. Mm-hmm. And something nice to highlight about these data sets is that they are available for most cities. So most cities do this type of transportation service, and the additional data that we use as well can be obtained. And I think this is nice because it means our model could be easily implemented to look at policies in other places.
And how much data do you need to also collect to establish a sort of counterfactual, the journeys that weren't made that could have been made, so you have a comparison here?
The first thing we need is, in order to know how individuals could react to changes, is to know what would have been the characteristics of their trip with a different mode. So let's say today you took the car to go to work, but how would have been your trip if you had used public transport? This is in part why we use Google Maps, to be able to know which subway line, which bus you have used, etc. And as well, we need some data to establish how these congestion levels are reacting to how much individuals are driving, right? And for this, we have extensive data from traffic sensors in the whole metropolitan area, so from the highways, from the city center, the ring roads. And this allows us to see how different areas react to changes in the amount of individuals driving and on how many kilometers they're driving.
In 2020, David Newbury discussed how transport policy could be made more sustainable after the pandemic using taxes and incentives. Did his predictions come true? Find out by listening to our episode, Post-Pandemic Transport Policy, from September of that year.
So having done that, you'll use this to measure the impact of traffic reduction policies. Which ones are you considering here?
Policies we consider are very related to what I mentioned before as like the most popular ones. So we have driving restrictions, just like banning a certain percentage of the population from driving, or we have urban tolls. And we focus mostly on two types of tolls. So a uniform one, where regardless of where you go, you have to pay the same price, and one that is variable and depends on the distance that you're driving. And in order to compare all of these policies, we look at different stringency levels, right? So we look at the percentage reduction in the number of kilometers driven to make a fair comparison across policies. And as well, we compare them to, let's say, like the ideal but not feasible in practice instrument, which will be to have personalized tolls based on the demographics of everyone and the specific characteristics of each trip.
You're comparing the welfare impact on Parisians. If you have a policy that charges people for using a car or stops them from using a car, what could possibly compensate for that?
So when we're looking at welfare, we look at the utility of the individuals, like right, what they get from driving, or in this case, from having to substitute to a different transportation mode. And this means that there is like only one dimension where individuals, in terms of consumer surplus, can win, which is if we improve the states, right? So any reduction in traffic makes journeys faster, and this already helps to compensate from the disutility of not being able to use your car. But for most individuals, it's not enough. So what we do find is that on aggregate, we can still improve things. But this is because when we think about welfare, we also think of the value of the emissions that are no longer being produced because we have less cars in the streets. But we can also think of redistributing the revenue that is coming from this congestion pricing. And this redistribution of revenue is going to be quite important when looking at welfare in aggregate terms.
So let's have a look at some of those results. First of all, if you're looking at tolls to use a car, you compared fixed and variable tolls. How do they compare in their impact?
As I said, we compare them by looking at the same reduction in number of kilometers driven. This because in the model, the number of kilometers driven in any given location is directly linked to the speed. And what we find is that the variable toll, also the one that depends on the distance that you're driving, is much more efficient in terms of welfare, in terms of having like values of the toll where society is better off once we have implemented it. And this is coming because this variable toll is very good at targeting the individuals that are driving the most and therefore the ones that are creating the most congestion, right? So these long commuters.
You also looked at restricting the ability of drivers to use their cars. Again, what sort of policies did you consider there and how does their impact compare?
In this case, we look at driving restrictions in just a percentage of individuals. You can think of it in practice, something like a license plate-based one. Let's say today, certain numbers cannot drive. The next day, a different set of numbers cannot drive. And we compare as well vintage restrictions based on the year or the fuel type of your car, which is something also very used in practice. What we find in terms of how they compare to the tolls is that they are not very good in terms of like welfare for individuals, because there is nothing to redistribute in terms of tax revenue, right? Because there is no tax. And instead, you're forcing individuals to use a different transportation mode. So the gains in the speed are not enough to compensate them for this substitution. And welfare-wise, I mean, you gain on traffic and emissions, but it's bigger the impact that you're having on individuals.
Now, whenever you try to tell people how they can move around in a city, it's controversial. I know it's very controversial here in London, where these policies have been accused of hurting poor people the most. So does your research tell you anything about the effect on inequality that any of these congestion policies would have?
Initially, it's good to take, for instance, the variable toll that I was mentioning, because you will imagine longer commuters than they are the ones that are worse off. And intuitively, you will say longer commuters are poor people that are living further away from the city center, and we will have this type of distributional effect. In Paris, it turns out there are suburbs in the south that are very rich. So it's not obvious that distance is related to your income and therefore to whom we're targeting. We find that it's really important when it comes to terms of the distributional concerns is, one, that intuitively people are, poor people or low-income individuals are more affected by tolls because, well, money is a bit more scarce for them, but that there is a very important role on the quality of the alternatives you have from driving, right? So low-income neighborhoods in the outskirts, they don't necessarily have such a good access to public transport, and this means that if they cannot drive, the impact of having to take public transport or other transportation modes is much larger.
We have a tradition on Vox Talks, actually not one we've used for a while, but this is the perfect opportunity of making our researchers into the omnipotent policymaker for the day. So I'm going to put you in charge of traffic policy in Paris, a job that I'm sure you really, really want. If you had it, what would you do?
So I think there are two things to consider when we're thinking of implementing the policy. So first one, this is something we also look in additional scenarios in the paper, is what I was just mentioning on lack of good alternatives. So we could improve public transport, like improve the coverage or improve the speed of using public transport, so faster commutes with it. This will already help a lot to reduce the usage of cars, as well as to reduce the impact of making individuals use different transportation. And then, of course, as we talked during the whole episode, urban tolls can be quite useful, but there are many challenges that it's important to caution when thinking of implementing them. One is that you need infrastructure, right? If you're going to have them, you need to be able to charge individuals and to monitor that they're paying, as well if you're doing it depending on the distance that they're driving, it becomes a bit more complicated, so this is something to take into account, as well as how you're going to redistribute the money from the taxes. Because in the paper, we look at it on aggregate, but there is still this question that we will need to figure out, which is who should benefit most from receiving this subsidy? And this leads a bit to the last point, which is it's hard to take into account distributional concerns. As you were mentioning, these type of policies are very controversial, and that's something that in practice makes it harder sometimes to implement.
Nicolas, thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Tim.
The paper is called The Welfare Consequences of Urban Traffic Regulations, and the authors, Isis Dormeyer and Nicolas Martinez. It is discussion paper 18332 at CEPR.
This has been a Vox Talk from the Centre for Economic Policy Research. If you enjoy our podcasts, tell someone about us. And remember to subscribe. You can find us wherever you get your podcasts. Next week on Vox Talks Economics, why the arrival of refugees is affecting children's health in Africa.